Welcome to the second quarter 2023 AEW Investors Call. As a reminder, all lines are muted. If you would like to ask a question, please click star 69 on your telephone. I will now turn the call over to Josh Nason of Wrestling Observer and Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. Please go ahead, Josh.
Well, we have returned for the second ever AEW Investors Call, where we talk about the quarters that were the second quarter of this year, 2023, which is hurtling past us at record speed. Of course, this is, we started doing this a couple months ago because obviously WWE does their quarterly Investors Call. And look, we spend so much time talking about pro wrestling and all this stuff, and AEW especially. We figured, why not do a quarterly Investors Call, talk about all the numbers that we do know and some speculate and some we don't. Of course, help me do that once again. Brandon Thurston, he is back from WrestleNomics. We say a good hello, hello to you, Brandon, as you do on WrestleNomics every Sunday, and welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me. An authentic WrestleNomics Radio listener, I can tell.
Yes, very true. Very true.
Yes.
I am hoping. I was on Jesse Collins' show last week.
Okay.
I believe. And I said a good hello, hello to him, and
Oh,
we talked about
wonderful.
the origins of that story, which I briefly had forgot about, but then I remembered the lawn care or the
Yes.
gardening center, whatever it is there in New York, that is part of the Gullo family dynasty.
Yes, he's not especially close with that uncle, but that is his relation. He has
Yeah.
confirmed to us. Yes.
Very good. Yeah. And so we talked about that, and of course, yeah, just I think it'd be a fun game on WrestleNomics to play sometimes, because I don't know how you would do this, but to try to get Jesse to actually crack up and laugh. He's very hard to break, I've noticed. And
Yeah, see,
I
if you watch on video, I come out with like great jokes and one-liners all the time, and he just no-sells them. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can hear it on the podcast version too, I've noticed. The
Can you?
on
Can you?
Patreon. Yeah, I'm just like, you got him, you got him. And it's like, I did not take the bait. So yeah, you're keep on trying. One of these days you'll get him.
But I'm glad someone else feels that way, because I feel like, I am constantly coming up with witty things to say, and I just get no-sold all the time.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Maybe MJ from MJ, the famous MJ from MJ, would be someone you can crack up for now against. Quite a
Yes.
universe you're building over there at WrestleNomics.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, we had MJ from NJ fill in for John Pollock for the midweek podcast that I usually do with John Pollock the other week, and he has many theories, but he also has a finance background, so he knows a lot of things that I don't know.
Yeah, you definitely tell he's very well versed in all, especially when he's asking specific questions. And I'm sure your various Twitter DMs that you mentioned that he sends you, just
Yeah,
he's
oh,
dive.
not just DMs, but he will at me on Twitter. I think he did this morning, like almost every day. I get some tweet that I'm tagged in.
Oh,
Yes.
very good, very good. Well, let's go to what we're here for, the main event, of course, the second quarter of this year, April, May, and June. We'll talk about here. So it's a little bit different than the year review series that I do at the end of the year. So we're just going to talk strictly about some of the business metrics, developments, key highlights and notables and such. And so we don't really go into storylines and things like that. We'll save that for the year-end series. However, some of the second quarter highlights is we'll go over. Again, AEW, not a publicly traded company, so we just kind of get the numbers where we can from insiders such as Brandon and Dave Meltzer and others, that we get some of the numbers from, and also some of the publicly announced stuff. So probably, the biggest highlight of the quarter for AEW was All In being announced. And it was announced for Wembley Stadium in London, England. This is a huge announcement, one that Tony Khan had built up and said this is going to be a major thing, a major happening, and one of the things he was going to be most proud of. And again, there was some kind of speculation what this would be, because obviously Tony Khan loves his announcements, and this was a big one he had been building up. And yeah, he did it with Nigel McGuinness, who debuted. We'll talk about that in a second. But Nigel McGuinness and Adam Cole actually made the announcement as a kind of a backstage awkward promo, as they always are, it seems, with Tony Khan, who's in front of the camera. And you know, all that aside, this was a huge success. The pre-sale, the first day of pre-sale, of course, we, you know, Wembley Stadium, we're like, how is this going to work? I think a lot of people assume it's going to be Craven Cottage, which the Cons own. But no, this was a Wembley Stadium, and there was some, again, some speculation, some discussion as far as like how they're going to sell, and they have sold great, to say the least. At first day of presale, it was 36,000 tickets plus for a presale of $4.7 million revenue USD right out the gate. Of course, the day later was about 43,000 tickets and crossed the $5.7 million mark, and it just started to snowball from there. Ended up at the pre-sale date, which I pre-sale days, which I believe were 3 days total, ended up at 50,000 tickets sold for $6.5 million, maybe a couple extra days there, here and there. But then the actual public sale happened and ended up with 60,000 tickets sold by May 5th. That was the day of the public sale. And this was, and this number has surpassed, I believe, 80,000 at the last check. And it's going to be undoubtedly, arguably, probably the highest, most highest attended wrestling show, paid wrestling show of all time, and probably the highest revenue of all time. I think it's where it's trending. Got to kind of get on the numbers there, some along those lines. But regardless where it's going to fit, I mean, with no card announced, this is the majority of this done with no card announced. It's a pretty big feather in the cap for AEW to do this.
Yeah, I'm looking at the WrestleTix daily tracker, and WrestleTix has tickets distributed at 80,056. So just 56 over 80,000 flat. Estimated paid is 74,655. So that in terms of like where that is in history, there's only a few shows that you could really put ahead of it. The North Korea shows, for whatever those are worth, the government probably ordered all those people to go to the show. After that, in terms of, you know, shows that where tickets were actually sold to people based on, you know, wanting to see a wrestling event, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 32, SummerSlam 1992, those are three that are definitely up there. There might be a few more. I think number one, I've just been, you've caught me on a day where I've been doing for a lot of the day today is looking at pictures of the demolition of the Pontiac Silverdome. And because it's empty, you can actually get a better view of the seats. And I was counting the seats and then, you know, counting various sections, getting a sample, and then looking at the seating map and calculating the area for each section and extrapolating the seats onto each section to get what was really the seating capacity. Because according to Dave Meltzer, the seating capacity of the Silverdome was not 80,000 for football, but was less than that. Even the seating capacity for football was exaggerated. I'm going on a huge tangent here, but in any case, I'm finding that there may be some support here for that notion. So what was really the sold number? I mean, according to Dave, I think it's the attendance is 78. I think he puts the paid at a few thousand lower than that. This, if that's true, this event has pretty much equaled that at this point with a couple of weeks to go here. So it's going to be one of the biggest shows ever. Will it be the biggest attendance ever? This will be much debated, especially in my world. It's got a shot at it, I think. Yes. WrestleMania 32, the ticket sales for WrestleMania 32 are somewhere around 80,000. Certainly no higher than 88,000, but that's a pretty wide range based on the WWE's KPIs. But we do know that the range varies from somewhere between 73,000 and 88,000 is definitely the number of tickets sold for WrestleMania 32. So those are sort of the margins that those are the records that it's up against here. Yeah. But it's going to be a huge show. And I think we're learning again here that history is a draw. And I think there have been times where AEW has underestimated its ability to sell a lot of tickets at a stadium on certain occasions. I think they could have done it in Canada, but passed on it. They're doing it here. And I think this could be a great marketing value if AEW wants to make All In its WrestleMania. Whether or not it will remains to be seen.
Right. And we'll talk more about All Out in just a second. The other big news, of course, during this stretch, finally, Brandon, AEW Collision happened. Went from being a rumor to being announced at the WBD upfronts. And this was, I was going through the April, May, and June headlines last week. in preparation, just kind of, it's interesting going back. Of course, this started with the Punk coming back rumors during the summertime, and it just kind of, again, snowballed from there with rumor after rumor. Finally, it was like, okay, this third show is going to happen. And you got more details. And eventually, kind of what happened was a weekly live show, of course, on Saturdays, 2 hours. First run of dates were announced that day, except for the first date. And the reason for that was CM Punk, surprisingly, was not mentioned at the upfront. Brand, there's always controversy with this guy, CM Punk, when it comes to announcements and what he says and what he doesn't do and all this stuff, because he wasn't mentioned at the upfront, which was a big surprise, wasn't mentioned in the release and so on. However, I think it was Jimmy Trina from SI noticed that yes. He was included in an original. I'm trying to remember if it was in the URL or
you could see it in the title on WBD's website. So I think they had for a moment released it with his name on it, but then made an edit. But there was something cached or some remnant that his name was in it.
Right, and then of course somebody reached out for comment, and the quote was from WDPR was that he was quote unquote not affiliated with the show, and that added a whole nother layer of things. Of course, the debut date in terms of location was not announced, and the expectation is going to be for the United Center. But of course, if Punk wasn't going to be there, we would later learn that it was due to an issue with Ace Steel not being on the team and how that whole thing was going to work out. And it was eventually settled. It was announced a week later for the United Center. And then later on that CM Punk was going to, of course, be part of that show. There was talk about a backup date in Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know if that was ever really confirmed or not, but there was, according to Dave, there was definitely some sort of plan to go elsewhere if for some reason Punk decided not to show up for that. And then, of course, there was initially that the return was going to be called the Second Coming. That never came to fruition. No full rights deal, as it was first reported by Dave, womp womp, as I put in here. Kind of disappointing. We expected perhaps this was going to be the 5-year deal or something like that. This is going to be part of that. However, technically, there was a new deal of some sort. We still have no idea on money. We assume that WBD picked up the year-long option, but in terms of their extension option for that 1 year, but in terms of how Collision fits into that, how much extra they got paid and all that, not really fully sure on that. But we do know the WBD nabbed the exclusive domestic rights as part of the new arrangement, which means the end of Dark and Dark Elevation on YouTube. So WBD having the control over everything domestically. Of course, we still don't have a streaming service or any really inkling when that's going to happen. So that's a whole thing. Collision.
I did get out of Tony in the press conference, I believe after Double or Nothing, that AEW is getting more money because of Collision, because right. the expense has to be like $25 million a year. So I would guess it's something now around $70 million a year that they're getting from WBD annualized, but no renewal. Yeah. Mm.
So I assume they're kind of like WWE, in which they cover all their own production costs, I don't think it's ever been confirmed. It's kind of assumed. Yeah.
I believe that AEW has to pay for their own production costs, but that, but that WBD is paying them enough to offset that, certainly.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, yeah. So no more Dark Elevation on YouTube. 816,000 viewers for the debut, 0.33 in the key demo. One of the infamous lines, of course, CM Punk, the one Bill Phil, as he referred to himself. Of course, the rumors, unsubstantiated. I don't know kind of what you consider them about the $1 billion deal that was going to be announced, but of course never was.
That's what David Zaslav calls him, according to Punk.
True, yes. One Bill Phil. That's right. Counterfeit Bucks, that line, which is the echoes of resonated, of course, this past week. Tony paying up for Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting for Elton John, so definitely committing the money into it. And yeah, this was, we're a couple months or so into this now. I think we're just past the 2-month mark, give or take. They've had the second show. I think it's had its struggles the past couple of weeks with viewership, that's for sure, compared to this, and that'll be a story going forward. But in terms of all the rumors, ended up essentially being true, other than the fact there was no full rights deal and that Punk was going to be part of the show. There are people that seem to be exclusive to Collision, even though Tony Khan says had no hard lines, but essentially Punk is running it with Tony Khan paying the bill in a lot of ways. He has a lot of control over who's there, who's not. And, I think we're still kind of too early into it to say if it's a success or not. But, it exists. It's an entity. It has a different feel, I think, than Dynamite does. And, you know, yeah, I guess we'll see where this goes months from now. But, you know, EW got their extra 2 hours per week and live at that.
Yeah, according to them, that they're focusing on it, then the network is focusing on the ranking of Collision. I mean, this is a big deal to see where this rating normalizes. The rating that just came out on Tuesday, as we're recording this, is a 0.17 in the demo, 476,000 viewers total. It ranked number 11 on the night, up against a lot of NFL preseason football games on the NFL Network on cable that were outranking it. There's more competition to come in college football next month. It's going to get preempted probably for playoffs might preempt them. And certainly by March Madness, I think they'll be bounced around a lot, but in any case, it's, I think 1.7 is about what it's going to do for, I don't know, for the rest of the month. That's only like one, you know, two more weeks, but I think, you know, there's a lot of questions around what it's going to do once college football does start to go against it. I imagine it'll stay in the teens. And that's probably good enough to justify the kind of value that they want out of it, but it can't decline in the way that Rampage has declined. And I think that is, you know, I think my perception is that when it comes to Rampage, just the focus was taken off of Rampage. I don't know why. And it became the secondary show that Tony said it wouldn't become. And that can't happen with this show. This has to be a second flagship show for them to drive a lot of value. And I think, you know, it's going to have a lot of sports competition. We saw what the first WPLE did against it. You know, SummerSlam took a huge bite out of it last week. It did 417,000 viewers, which is its second lowest. You know, it was the lowest total viewership that it's done. And it was essentially tied in the demo for that July 4th weekend. So that's going to happen once a month. That's going to be taking a bite out of Collision.
Yeah.
So it's big challenges for them. And I think there's creative challenges too, to actually stay focused and, you know, focusing on creative and executing in a way that, you know, sees storylines through and sees the pushes of talent through, I think has been one of the real challenges for AEW that they're going to have to overcome to some degree to make sure that Collision is a valuable TV show.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we haven't even mentioned SummerSlam and going up against it 2 weeks ago, and that's going to happen. You know, Saturday pay-per-views are, or PLEs are definitely a thing that's going forward for WWE. And that's
going to go against WrestleMania.
I know.
Like one anyway.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And think, I mean, there's for terms of like an alternate night for them that they could have gone to. I don't really know if there is one that they could stay away from tough competition in terms of kind of who they're trying to get and so on. There's just not.
They could use Thursday, but I see there being problems with Thursday, certainly in Turner's world with basketball on Thursdays.
Right.
And yeah, maybe there's a football issue there, but certainly there's a football issue on Saturday night too.
Yeah. Pay-per-views, AEW Double or Nothing return to Vegas, about 140,000 plus, I guess, estimated buys. I don't know what the final was, but it was you know, decent amount there. We had over 10,000 in attendance there, nearly 11,000, 9,000 paid, according to the numbers. I don't know what the gate revenue was. I don't know if that was ever recorded.
Oh, I've reported it. I've reported it somewhere. It's in Pollstar. I will pull it up in a moment. I think it was under a million. It's one of the sub-million pay-per-view gates.
Got it. While you do that, we'll go to AEW Forbidden Door. Of course, debut in Toronto, sold out, nearly 15,000 in attendance. They did not break out the comps to paid, over 140,000 estimated pay-per-view buys. And this one is official because they did break the company live gate record. And this was after the all-in on sale. Of course, it's not official till the event happens. Of course, something, you know, never know what could happen. But the live gate record broken at about, quote unquote, $1.2 million US dollars. And this this will obviously be decimated by all in, assuming everything goes through with that. But yeah, this was they've seemed to really, with the pay-per-views in terms of AEW branding anyway, have really kind of, they're in this general range of 100 and, you know, anywhere from 135,000 to 140 plus thousand without a lot of spikes. Obviously, you know, a far cry from the 205 or so they did for All Out when Punk came back. But it was, you know, they aren't going down, which is good, but they're also not going up. And I, you know, I don't, there's There's so many things you couldn't say about this. Again, conversion rates. How do you get more of your dynamite viewers to convert over? Why aren't they converting over more? What percentage are stealing stuff off the internet? What percentage that maybe they're just getting together? What percentage would just never buy to begin with? And also things like, you know, there's a lot of kvetching online, like there always is, about things like, you know, the cards being announced late and so on. You know, could they be there? There's part of me which is saying that things have changed so much with how things are promoted now that you don't need as much lead time as you might. You just need buzz on social, especially with your audience. And I think that can be argued, but I think there is something to that where you don't necessarily need to release a card 2 months in advance and kind of build up to it. I think Khan doesn't, I think he just doesn't, that's not, he doesn't believe in that anymore. Kind of short and allows him a little bit more promo time. Again, Forbidden Door, just the way New Japan does their announcements and all that. I think it's kind of this, that's just kind of the way things are baked in. But I think there's interesting debates on both sides of why the numbers aren't going up month to month. And they're, you know, nice and consistent, but they're just, they're not seeing that up and to the right that you might expect. Again, Punk was on that Forbidden Door show card, again, kind of an undersold appearance, but I'll be fascinated to see kind of what happens with All In and All Out back to back. I think we have some interesting numbers coming up in the next month.
Yeah. So the Double or Nothing gate, by the way, was $964,000. And the attendance was, I mean, it's strong for an AEW show. It's a big building. It was not sold out. I was there live, and there were some sections where there was definitely some empty seats in there. But it's along the lines of some other shows, you know, that haven't been sellouts for AEW pay-per-views. I think, and there's no magic formula to, like, how do we sell more pay-per-views? So the ceiling is just over 200,000, right? For All Out 2021, Punk's debut match in AEW. And I think there's no, you know, magic wand to, like, well, if we just pull this lever, we'll get more buys. It's to create a compelling show that people want to pay to see, and to elevate stars and make stars into bigger stars. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see, though, what's going to happen with All In and All Out. I imagine they're going to do, if I were to venture to guess, I would imagine they're going to do around this number, 140 for each. I know the idea that you have two so close together is going to, you know, theoretically reduce the demand. I think what we've seen through history, whether it's In Your House or whether it's the W Network, is that even if you, and this is another subject, but even if you increase the number of pay-per-views that you do in a year, now this is a different story, increasing the number of pay-per-views you do over the course of 2 weeks. But pay-per-view has proven to be a pretty inelastic product, meaning, you know, no matter how much of it you provide, no matter what the price is, which isn't an issue here, but no matter sort of what you do with the product, there's kind of the same number of people who buy it. And I think, you know, one way or another, we'll have about 140 between them, I would guess. That's a good over-under, I guess I would say.
Yeah. Has All Out been officially announced as a pay-per-view yet? I don't think it has it?
On the Dynamite 2 weeks ago, I think they definitely confirmed that it was a pay-per-view. And I've definitely been told by DirecTV and In Demand, they are providing it on pay-per-view. So you can get on Bleacher Report. It will be there. And what I was told about the notion that it would be a streaming event on Max is that, despite what David Zaslav has said on their earnings call a couple of weeks ago, Max is not prepared any way to do a live stream of All In on August 27th. They've announced that they're going to do sports. They're going to do baseball games in October. That's their target, or at least that's the report from, I believe, CNBC. I don't know that WBD has confirmed that on the record, but they're not ready to do a live stream, is my understanding, which was the speculation.
So, sorry, I meant All Out. Has All Out been confirmed to be on pay-per-view?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Isn't that crazy, though? Again, it's always kind of this conspiracy thought of, like, why haven't they just come out and said it yet? And is a case where they think that a percentage of the viewers may choose, or, you know, if they're going to do, I'm surprised, I guess this ties in, I'm surprised they're not offering a bundle to offer their fans, like, get both of them for like $60.
That's definitely not happening.
Yeah, but so I'm wondering if,
I think probably
I'm just wondering
a major
why.
Issue is that the infrastructure for, to offer a bundle, let's say, is probably just not there to make that happen easily. Like, there should be something nice that they should be able to do, offer a rebate or something if you can prove proof of purchase that you bought both of these. Maybe, you know, give somebody something for that. But I don't think that I would suspect, nobody's told me this, but I would suspect that it would be difficult to make that happen broadly. Mm-hmm. Maybe digitally it would be easier. But you know, got enough problems ordering the pay-per-view through Bleacher Report to begin with. So
yeah, I have never had any, knock on wood, I've never had any problems ordering a pay-per-view ever. Like, okay. I think because I order well in advance, like a week before, because I just know that crush of people. But like UFC shows, anyway, that's like,
you're one of the few then.
Yeah, I just order ahead of time, and I rarely watch for both these shows. I'll end up having issues, but yeah, I never have any problems. It's weird.
So I'm looking at AEW's website, and it says, then on Sunday, September 3rd, we are going to run it back at United Center as AEW presents All Out live on PPV. Mm. So there's an indication that this is, I mean, I have no doubt that it's going to be a pay-per-view, but they are in a small way there confirming. And the poster does say live on pay-per-view.
Yeah. I'm going to pin that for a future conversation about lifestyle dollars I want to have with you down the road. We'll pin that. Old sports term that I remember. And then also the big highlight, Fight Forever. We talked about that last time. Finally was released in late June. I am not a video game guy, so I don't know any trends or any numbers or how they've done. Have you talked about that in wrestling? I think you said you didn't really know either, right, at one point?
No, the reviews are mixed. Yeah. They weren't terrible, weren't great. And we talked to Mike Straw, who's a reporter on gaming, and you know, he said that if the only way to that there would be another iteration of the game, say a year from now, is if it's just an incredible seller. I don't have that impression, and it's hard to find information on, you know, what the trends are for video game sales. There is a website at NPD that will show like the top 10 video game sellers by month or something like that, and I haven't even seen WWE's, you know, 2K game in those listings, so I doubt we're ever going to see something like that for Fight Forever anytime soon. But it's, you know, it took them a long time to get it out there, and it's good that it's finally out there, and you know, hopefully they make money from it. But yeah,
I think it seems so much different now with the releases they can do. Like I think they're called packs. I'm going to sound so old saying this stuff because again, I'm not familiar with video games, but they
DLC, downloadable content, something like that.
It seems like, you know, updated characters and things like that. Maybe that's how a game
maybe
like
you have
this,
to pay for.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. We'll talk more about their other games in just a minute. But some other highlights and notables from the actually before I move on, was there any of those other highlights? Any other points you wanted to make before we move on to other stuff?
No, I'm just Googling DLC. What is the AEW Fight Forever DLC release date? Individual packs cost $12, it looks like. So, yes, incremental sales.
There you go.
That's all.
Other highlights and notables from the second quarter, Collision. Of course, whenever a new TV entity comes on board, of course, where it's going to be distributed, especially AEW, is relevant. So they're signed a deal to air live in Canada on TSN Plus. Confirmed that AEW Plus on Fight, that Collision would be live. And also tape delayed on Wednesdays on UK's ITV4. It is so crazy to me. We're 2023 and fans over there cannot see Collision. Of course, I imagine anyone that really wants to see it is not going to wait until the following Wednesday to watch it. But maybe some people do. Anyway, airing on tape delays in UK's ITV4. AEW now it's their June debut at Boston's TD Garden. Of course, it's not too far where I live, so I include this in there because it was kind of curious at the time. Because
did you go?
Yes, I did. I was
okay.
There. Yep. So I was there, and so
pretty big crowd.
What's that?
Pretty big crowd, right?
It was good, and a very, very lively crowd the entire night, which was good to see. They were into it for sure. I think so going into this, of course, they had not announced a blood and guts aspect yet, and so I was like, okay, something. There's a reason they're running this building as opposed to a smaller college arena that they have run like three times before, I believe. And of course, Blood and Guts was a big reason for that. And I don't think they ever really fully tied it in, or maybe they did, that the Blood and Guts, the cage match was perhaps a link towards Shark Week. I don't know if they mentioned that on the broadcast at all.
I think they did that in the prior year too.
Yeah. So perhaps that's a good indicator of what's to you know, for future years. Anytime it's a Shark Week, we know there's going to be a blood and guts cage match there.
Maybe. Yeah. There was a Red Cross ad read, I think that was deliberately placed during the match. So not a Pizza Hut controversy, but something deliberately tying into the blood that was happening on screen. Yeah. 8,956 was the WrestleTicks number of tickets distributed for that event, which is definitely on the high end of for Dynamite lately.
Yeah, yeah, it was full down, especially the lower tier, the loge sections as they call them there, definitely pretty full. But this is obviously, you know, a shift that they've done this summer towards larger arenas, and obviously the NBA and NHL are off, so these arenas have available dates. But of course, there's concerts going on all over the place, small arenas, big arenas, stadiums, and all that stuff. So there's certainly no shortage of stuff. But however, you know, on a weekday night, you know, they seem to be making this shift. I'm interested to see, we'll talk about this in the kind of the forecasting, if that continues, or if they kind of go back to their, you know, college arena, you know, 10,000 seat, 7,500 seat, you know, roots, so to speak, and kind of, you know, save the large arenas for specific dates, or I don't know. I'm just kind of curious how that works. The House Rule series ended for now, of course, with Collision on Saturday nights. They had this, those house shows they did. I don't know, really. I don't really see a path for those to return. You know, the company had to be pretty scorching hot. They're like, we're gonna send out, you know, a road show, or maybe do one Sundays or something like that. But I think with Collision, I don't really see that coming back anytime soon. Do you?
No, they did what, 5 of them. The first one, which we did get a public records request for, did about 3,000 in attendance. I do have the paid. There's a report on WrestleNomics.com that you can find. And that was the high point. The others did in the, you know, mid 1,000 range. Two others did just above 2,000. I imagine that there's some sort of deal that they're making for at least some of these events, these house shows that they did, so that there was some sort of guarantee. I think they were working with some sort of event promoter so that it wasn't purely just, we have to sell enough tickets to make a profit. I think there was some assurance that it would be worth their while. But this was all before the addition of Collision. They haven't run any of these. The last one was on June 3rd and Collision debuted on June 17th. So I see no way that they're going to do house shows. And as we've probably talked about before, you know, it doesn't make a ton of sense to do house shows for WWE. They're still running them. Obviously they're running a lot fewer than they used to. But the vast majority of the money that WWE and AEW make are through media rights, through various media deals, pay-per-view sales and things like that. And it's really expensive to put on the look of show that they put on television, and just selling tickets doesn't offset all that expense.
Throughout the quarter, Dynamite Rampage had some fluctuations in terms of their viewership. A few of the highlights, or lowlights, I guess, Wednesday, May 3rd was the lowest viewership of the year. Again, to that point, there was a mid-May Rampage that drew the lowest viewership in show history. However, during this quarter, Rampage was moved around for 5 straight weeks at its normal time slot. And we're going to put a pin next. I'm going to talk about that in the forecasting. There's a late June Dynamite that the lowest viewership in their normal time slot since 2020. It was the post Forbidden Door show. Drew about, I think it was 809,000 viewers, if I remember it by the report. And yeah, so again, just the normal kind of the ups and downs as they go, and not really consistent up and to the right. It's just, again, just these spikes. And you know, obviously, Blood and Guts did well, and specific shows did well, but for the most part, again, it just was not that consistency in terms of up. No, like, huge dips, but again, just kind of the ups and downs. And Rampage obviously struggling, as we've talked about. The Owen Hart tournament officially returned, so that partnership with the Hart family continues. Tony Khan said he saw an opportunity launching a fast channel with WBD, which I was very intrigued by. Tony Khan also said, surprisingly, Battle of the Belts will continue. And we've already had one since then. It was kind of a question of how that was going to happen. We got that revealed, which was essentially an hour after Collision, making a 3-hour block on Saturday nights. AWWB and WD launching a Figure Fighters mobile game for 2024. The company filed the trademark for Rise to the Top for a mobile game that's going to be released maybe at some point, perhaps never. The company filed the trademark for Wrestle Dream, which I believe it's a tie-in to a Japanese event or promotion or something like that. I remember a graphic or something, might have been Tony Khan shared or something. So it's something interesting, caught some hardcore fans' attention. I don't know if it's actually going to turn out to anything, but they filed that, which caught some attention. All Out again was officially announced. The third ever Grand Slam was announced. So the company will be turning in late September to Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, New York. So you have All In, All Out, and then another stadium show coming up later in that month. So a little bit of pressure there. Cons were not interested in buying Bellator, despite Errol Helwani's reporting that they were kicking the tires on it. And then ROH Death Before Dishonor, really only ROH note for the quarter, the Death Before Dishonor returning to pay-per-view in July. We talked about Supercard of Honor during our last show, but yeah, the company returning back to pay-per-view in July, obviously doing their tapings after Collision, so they're not, doesn't appear to be doing any more of the Universal Studios tapings anymore, so that era seems to be done. That makes sense, just to kind of save some money. I don't, they haven't really mentioned any updated numbers in terms of Ring of Honor subscribers to Honor Club or anything like that, but it's a promotion that exists.
12,000 was the last number that he disclosed.
That was, a while ago. I mean, we talked about that last time too. Yeah, it's a promotion that it exists, and it the pay-per-views are good quality, but it's, you know, it's nothing you really hear a lot of buzz about. It's just kind of a holding place for certain AEW talents and so on. And that's kind of about it when it comes to Ring of Honor. What of that list catches your eye or caught your eye throughout the month?
I can add that the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view event did $104,000 at the live gate, just over 2,000 tickets sold, according to Polestar. So, I mean, how does that compare to, let's say, a Dynamite? That, you know, Dynamite, I've got some Dynamite numbers doing, you know, 300,000. But for Ring of Honor, I guess that's all right. I don't know how that's doing on pay-per-view. I imagine that was the least bought pay-per-view of the Tony Khan era for Ring of Honor. But yeah, I guess gives people reps. It gives all the talent that AEW has that it probably doesn't need to that extent someplace to wrestle. Are they generating enough revenue to offset the expense that's related to it? I doubt it, but it continues to exist.
It's like we always are. Oh, we are trying to continue to exist, you know?
Yes.
All this stuff. Let's go over some events and we'll look over the PDF put together, which you can find, of course, ask WrestleNomics. If you're just a subscriber there, just to $5 a month, and you get all kinds of interesting exclusive audio and so on there. 23 total events during the quarter, 13 live Dynamite / Rampage tapings. There was a one live Rampage taping. That was the Battle of the Belts paired with that. That was the very beginning of the quarter in Kingston, Rhode Island. There was two live Collisions, three pay-per-views, which was Double or Nothing, Forbidden Door, and then ROH Supercard of Honor. And then four House Rules events, two in May and two in June. And let's go over to the PDF here. And we go, actually, we'll do, let's see.
What are we live events.
Yeah, let's do live events. You want to go through this?
So, I mean, I'm looking at in the PDF, just tickets distributed. I'm looking at average tickets distributed just for Dynamite. And in the quarter, this was down, it averaged 5,100. I'm sure it was helped by that. It's the Boston event that was in July. That was after July 1st. So this is not Q2. That was Q3. So that's not in there. That'll be in Q3. Well, anyway, in Q2, 5,100 is the average for Dynamite. That's down from the same period last year of 6,300. Total tickets distributed in Q2, which only includes a little bit of Collision, right? Only includes like a half a month out of three for Collision. And so total tickets distributed was 120, down from 128. And it's like a lot of the other metrics that we can see here is that from last year, it's a little bit less hot than it was the year before.
And of course, yeah, Dynamite tickets distributed. You think you're going to be able to do Collision at some point? And added to this?
Yeah, but see, I've got year-over-year comparisons here. I guess true. I could just add it and leave it on its own. But there's no year-over-year comparison yet for Collision. But Collision is, of course, it's doing better than Rampage, but not as well as Dynamite is in terms of total viewership, which is, you know, what we expect.
Right. Before we go to the notable additions and all that, do you want what struck you in terms of the viewership on the first page of the slide here?
Just it just contributes to the narrative that, you know, AEW is not as hot as it was last year. Total viewership is down 9% for Dynamite. Total viewership is down 14% for Rampage, and that's Not as bad. It's about in line, I guess, with what TBS and TNT are doing in terms of their cable originals that have made the Showbiz Daily. Showbiz Daily stops reporting just at the end of this quarter, so we have an entire period of Showbiz Daily. We actually have spoiler TV data that seems to be filling the gap. But anyway, in WWE's KPIs, they published that actually top 25 cable networks in prime time is actually up 6%. So take that for what that's worth. And in the demo, the decline is more aggressive, which tends to be the case with younger viewers, and total viewership or demo viewership for TBS and TNT is down 11%. So holding up better. I guess there's a lot of NBA in Q2, right? That's covering TNT at least, and top 25 cable down 8%. So I would say, you know, Dynamite and Rampage in the demo, which they've said is the more important metric to watch for viewership than total viewership, has been declining in this year. In the 12 months prior, has been declining worse than their networks and cable generally.
Let's go to YouTube views. YouTube views actually were up for the quarter, interestingly enough, and actually the highest since you've started looking at them, dating back to what, the first quarter of last year.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. Maybe there's some videos that have blown up, but what I've seen in the TV show clips that I post in the TV reports every TV show, those look pretty normal, and certainly Rampage has fallen off from what it once was. But yeah, YouTube is way up. We'll see if that trend continues. YouTube doesn't generate a ton of money, but it's an indicator of how people are engaging with the product, sure.
Yeah, I wonder if some of the shed in viewers has shifted over to YouTube. Obviously, I don't, you know, there might be some of that. That's how they get their dose, I wonder.
Yeah, I could look into that, and because I'm tracking all the Dynamite and Rampage and Collision clips. Actually, I'm tracking everything, but I can isolate that stuff and then look at if that has increased year over year.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. And then finally, Google Web Search Index slightly up in terms of searches for the quarter.
Yes, so I would look at that compared to Q2 of last year, where the index this quarter is 47. Index in the same quarter of the prior year is about 58. So that's down a bit. If you look at though what WWE and their Google Trends are doing lately, they're down a little bit year over year. I think at this point they're kind of flat, whereas I would say consumer interest is definitely up, you know, pretty strongly for WWE in this time versus the same time last year. So in WWE's case, maybe it's sort of under indexing, or there's a headwind in the data somehow that's not accounting for the increase in interest. In any case, this is, you know, decisively down. This is not flat. So maybe this is a genuine indicator of interest to a degree.
Yeah. And of course, during the second quarter last year, we had the MJF controversy with around Double or Nothing. And then as well as the subsequent promo he did on that June Dynamite the week after. So I wonder if searches were up that this guy was shooting, you know. I just wonder, you know, I'm trying to think of like newsworthy events, things like that. Obviously, you know, Punk coming back was a pretty newsworthy
thing. I think it's just
well.
The freshness of Punk, you know. I know what we talk about, I don't see reflected that strongly. To a degree it contributes, yes, in the vast web search that we see here in this chart, but I think when it comes to like star, you see the weirdest things, like some of the most highly searched for AEW talent are still Paul White and Mark Henry, for example, despite like, I don't know when the last time either of them were on television, yeah. But just their presence on television for decades is still coming through.
Yeah. Jesse Collins, a big Paul White fan. We were talking about that on the, when I was on his podcast, cause he's doing appearances for AEW in London and kind of around trying to build up buzz. I'm like, is Paul White. And he's like, yeah, you know, he was talking about, I could see that is, you know, for someone, again, if you're a mainstream media, doesn't follow wrestling and you have this guy that's, you know, almost 7 feet tall, walks in, has a true presence, that's kind of your stereotypical, this is a wrestler, you know, that type of thing. So yeah, Paul White. Who knew? He's still a big draw.
Is he going to do something on the show? Is someone going to body slam him, maybe?
You know, I would not be surprised. He's talked, I mean, months ago, he talked about doing something in the, that he was closing in as his knee was doing better and that he thought he was going to, you know, do some sort of comeback or.
I can't imagine you have him promote the show. If he's doing really doing that heavily, why would he not be on the show then?
Right. So you think he's going to lean in someone and say, slam me, brother?
Yeah, maybe.
Slam me, boss.
Slammy boss.
That's right.
You know, and they'll be shocked. They won't know it ahead of time either.
Exactly. No, exactly. Let's talk about some notable moves, both in and out. A lot of moves this quarter. A lot of people brought on. And Will Washington joining as the director of wrestling administration. Aussie Open signed to a deal. NJ and Duca, we think, was signed to a deal. Jimmy Jacobs, Chris Hero, perhaps. He was originally doing a trial run as a producer backstage.
I think Chris Hero has confirmed that he has been hired now.
Okay. Got it. Who knows with all the backstage machinations, as they were. Nigel McGuinness, of course, I mentioned him, brought on. Adam Hopkins as the new head of PR. Jay White officially signed Billy Starks. There was some talk about her signing a deal. I don't know if that's official or not or what kind of deal it is, but obviously she's working all over the place. But there was some talk about that from Tony Schiavone, Commander, and then Roderick Strong. Re-signings include John Morrison. I don't know if he's officially all elite, so to speak, but obviously he's back in the mix and doing stuff, so it could be a per appearance thing or a short run. Not really sure. Sky Blue officially.
You mean Johnny TV, right?
Johnny TV, of course, right. Yes. Sky Blue, FTR, that was notable in the month. Probably the most notable signing in a lot of ways, signing, I think they said a 4-year deal, and then they're going to be done after that. We'll see if that happens. Of course, Brian Cage brought back as well. Notable departures, Leva Bates, Sandra Gray, who's a backstage seamstress. BJ Whitmer was fired after sexual assault allegations, I believe domestic violence. And Fuego del Sol also, his time came to an end, and other moves. Contract talks were continuing with the Elite throughout this month. Of course, they finally did re-sign all four of the guys for multi-year deals, but there was some news about, you know, Hangman Page starting to talk and, again, continue stuff with Omega and the Bucks and all that. But obviously that would turn out well, as we'll talk about the next time we do this. But yeah, some, you know, the usual amount of comings and goings, more comings than goings, I guess you could say. And yeah, I mean, without knowing the contract dates for all these talents, it's, you know, at a point there could be, you know, a stretch, or we have some people that are not re-upped because there's obviously a lot of talent not being used.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track. I was looking at their roster page and I counted it a couple of weeks ago, and it's something like 150 wrestlers that they have on their contract. And at least they do, you know, have an extra show now in Collision to justify a lot of that. It's like they keep piling up.
They do. All right, so let's do some forecasting. So look at the rest of Q3, of course, through September. Maybe, you know, of course, some of these extend beyond. I'll start with this. I'm going to start with the Punk factor. I know we're talking about the past, but it's hard not to talk about kind of what's happened the past few days with some of these revelations, or, you know, it's come to light about him being a little bit more firmly in control of Collision than maybe we thought or had known, and certain talents being asked to come to the building, book for the building, and then asked to leave, saying they were unbooked and given travel home, which include Ryan Nemeth, Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, of course, Christopher Daniels, the head of talent relations, now not allowed to be on Collision, which is quite a thing. And obviously there's been a lot of chatter as we record this on Tuesday afternoon. And, you know, it's an interesting thing because you give someone that much power and control. And of course, the people he had the conflict with initially just re-upped as well. And there was this whole thing with Hangman Page. There's now a question again, was he asked to do his tape offsite because of Punk or not? And there's some talk that he wasn't. It seems odd though, they bring him in to do an offsite taping. Just said it doesn't really seem to line up, but with a lot of this Punk stuff, it doesn't seem to line up. I just wonder if some talent just kind of starts getting fed up with this, if everyone's kind of willing just to be happy to be working and just kind of keep floating along, which I think is probably the case for a lot of people. But I poke the Punk factor here, because at any point to me, something could happen where there's, I would say, another instant, or he decides to leave, or he decides to just, I don't know. I don't think Tony Khan would ever suspend him, but he seems to be firmly in the Punk camp, whereas he has people that are EVPs that are not in the Punk camp that report to him and just resign, that Punk continues to kind of antagonize, even though, you know, he's not really supposed to be and just can't seem to help himself, even though he said it wasn't his intent or what have you. So what do you make of the Punk factor and how this potentially could blow up over the next 3 months to, you know, who knows how long?
Yeah. So I mean, Punk is undoubtedly the biggest draw that they have, which is probably the question that people want to hear me answer. And I think he's undoubtedly, he's the, he's the, been a big contributor. Even now, I mean, there was tremendous interest when he first came in, and that's the way it's going to be because he's new. And I don't think the fact that his drawing power has diminished over time since then is like a failure. He's still the biggest draw that they have. Collision ratings are doing what they're doing because of him. It would be a lot lower if he wasn't on the show every week. And he's still apparently selling merch pretty strongly and things like that. But I think there's a lot of fundamental issues that AEW has in terms of how it was started with EVPs who had certainly no corporate background and experience, setting them up to be EVPs. But I think a lot of this, you know, comes down to leadership and, you know, where is in WWE's case, what before the Vince scandal happened, I think, you know, WWE had a product problem, but it didn't have this sort of command and control problem. I mean, I think Vince is a terrible head of creative, but he was an effective commander, if you will. He was an effective executive as it relates to talent and getting them to do what he wants them to do to benefit the company. WWE has largely corrected their product problem in that way. It's not perfect to everybody's liking, but it's gotten better. And they still have, despite Vince not really being around, at least at TV, they've corrected that issue. And still, it seems like they have pretty good command and control over their talent. And just where is the leadership and the trust that people have in Tony to be convinced and compelled to do the right thing for the business and to not cause these problems that come up all the time? And if this was a publicly traded company, it would cast some uncertainty that, you know, it seems like at any moment there could be a literal fight that breaks out and takes out some of your top stars for months on end. That's a lot of uncertainty, and it does put some questions around even the media value. If you don't have Punk around anymore, well, maybe Collision doesn't do the rating that's going to do. And if he up and quits or something is permanently severed from the company, what does that do to the value of Collision and the value of your media rights? I don't know. And Tony is insistent on not talking about this. And I think it affects, there have been enough instances of this for a long enough time. We're almost a year removed from All Out, the press conference.
Yeah.
And he did an interview the other day and he was asked about it and didn't want to comment on it and went into his routine about how he's so happy that people are interested in the wrestlers without addressing it. And it just doesn't seem like there's strong leadership that compels cohesive behavior and cooperation in the company. And that's not to absolve Punk from being part of the problem, but there doesn't seem to be a good control of the problem.
Yeah. And I think that's been a thing that has been a little bit discussed. Dave has mentioned before about how this, he thought this thing could have been nipped in the bud over a year ago if Tony kind of just brought all the people together and just kind of ironed out the issues, and it just blew up, and it doesn't appear anything was really done to do that. It was a case of, well, I can have my cake and eat it too. I can have all the talent and I'll separate them out and maybe eventually things will kind of come together. And so yeah, far we're having some issues still. And
when I say there's fundamental issues, like part of that, I mean, like, it's fundamental to the creation and the opportunity of AEW that you would have somebody who was a member of a family of extreme wealth as Tony is, so that they had the money to jump over this enormous barrier to entry that is getting on television to set up a major U.S. wrestling company in competition with WWE. You had to have somebody of enormous wealth that could sort of buy his way in. Obviously, he has a lot of work experience and sports experience with the Jaguars and with his analytics company, but has he ever had to manage not just employees, not just, you know, subordinates, but an extremely competitive set of subordinates who, you know, on a recurring basis have all this high school drama. It reminds me of the time I asked him on a media call, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned in terms of how to manage talent, you know, over the last 3-4 years? And he went on a long 8-minute answer and talking about the Jaguars and stuff like that. And I'm not sure, you know, I got much of an answer, despite there being a lot of words that he said.
Yeah.
And I think it sort of speaks to, obviously he's got people around him, but there needs to be stronger leadership in the company, and it doesn't seem that there is.
Yeah. And you look at things like the head of talent relations asked to not be part of your, you're saying it's a flagship show. Doesn't really show much of an ability to stick with your management team. And I think that's a big factor, you know, and people can say, oh, you know, who means more? We get that, but that's also, there's a much bigger thing as we're talking about of leadership, and the buck stops here, which Vince McMahon has for all his faults he's had and has had. And Tony Khan just doesn't seem to have that yet.
And in a traditional setting, you know, the promoter would be some old guy, typically,
yeah,
who was a wrestler, et cetera, and has all this veteran clout with the people that he's directing. And you know, Tony doesn't have that. But I don't know. On the other hand, I think the lack of his connection and lack of his sort of inheritance of all this vet culture has been to AEW's benefit to get rid of some of the bad habits.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So a few more things. Of course, we talked about All In. What numbers it will hit? It will be the most attended, highest revenue for any paid wrestling show ever. It's a lot to.
It will not be the highest revenue, certainly.
Okay. So
because WrestleMania 32 did, for a single event, it's $17.3 million in 2016, which if you adjust it for inflation, I mean, we don't even need to do that. It would be like $20 million. But it's not going to get to $17 million in for a live gate. It could get to $10 million, but that's still a far ways away from 17.
So do you think if Tony Khan sold million-dollar seats to some of his high friends at these white parties that he goes to?
That's on the Ticketmaster Platinum tickets, right?
Where that's they right. Just,
that's gouge right. You.
So really, it's just, yeah, kind of look at, I'll sort of rephrase this, kind of where, again, is going to be the most attended. What is the final revenue number end up at? And again, what's quality of show? Is it something that really sticks out to people? You know, there's been a little bit of trepidation about the card and kind of being slow to come together. Seems to be a factor with every AEW big show, but kind of how they really land the plane with this. And does it, to your point, does it become their WrestleMania, or is it, you know, where is it? How does it end up? How does it look? How does it feel? And again, coming after that with the back-to-back pay-per-view, how does everything work? And I think that's what we're most fascinated to see.
Ruling out the North Korea shows, which supposedly did over 100,000, and ruling out the harder to verify way back historic 100,000 numbers with Jim Londos and things like that, in terms of, you know, the modern era, which maybe we could start around the 60s. What's the record that it would have to break? It would, as of this afternoon, I believe WrestleMania 3 probably had around what Dave says, 78,000. I know I said something very different the other day, but since doing this research, that until somebody shows me a really good challenge to it, I'm leaning more towards what Dave says about WrestleMania 3. So let's say, you know, let's give it a little bit of a bump at 80,000. They are, if I look at the tracker here again, they are at 80,000 distributed. Well, in my experience of seeing a few ticket audits and drop count, you know, scan counts, tickets distributed will be pretty close to the number of people in the building. Does that make sense? No, it's paid will be pretty close to the number of people in the building, right? Because you have some no-shows, you have some comps to offset that. Mm-hmm. So right now in paid, they're at about 70, just under 75,000. There'll be a little bit of a ramp up as the days get closer. Maybe it gets to 80,000. Does it get to 85,000? To get to up getting close to 90. So what is the record that they have to break? I guess it's probably WrestleMania 32 and 80,000. And that's according to the Arlington police. Maybe it includes suites, maybe it doesn't. 80,709. They can probably do that. There'll be a big debate about whether it includes suites or not, I suppose. It could be the most attended show ever. I've not thought about this as clearly until right now, but it could be the most highly attended show of the modern era.
I was interested to hear that WWE counts Ticketmaster revenue or Ticketmaster fees as part of their numbers. And
when they announce the gate, they do. Yes.
So as someone that used to work in pro sports and was directly involved with ticket sales and forecasting and all that stuff, we never included that at all. We also, when it came to numbers,
even
in press releases, never did. Yeah, never did. We always, and we had sellouts we had a big string of sellouts. And this is when I was working pro hockey. We sold out almost half our season 1 year. And we, when attendance, we also did obviously just sold tickets. We never did, that kind of like ticket takers, ushers, and also, granted, it's a much less scale than, you know, WrestleMania or something like that. I just, that practice is something when I first heard that, I was, it felt very foreign to me because I just, it doesn't seem, it people in the building, they're not there watching the show, they're working,
right?
You know, so
well,
people,
you know, the answer I get is that, oh, everybody does this in sports and the college football, there's exaggeration. I was told, that, you know, because I did the report on Royal Rumble at Alamo Dome, that, oh, look at the NBA game that I think the Spurs had just had at the Alamo Dome. There's a big exaggeration there too, supposedly.
I have never heard of that practice before, ever. Because your tickets are like, it's very strange. Because most, I think they still do this, is websites obviously will track attendance for attendance leaders and all that. And I've never heard that used as a practice. I'll have to, I have a few friends at work still in higher level pro sports. I'll have to ask them if that's a thing or not.
And it was interesting in the emails between San Antonio employees and WWE, there's communication in there in the records request that I got that shows them talking about the attendance, of course, and the heartbeat comment and all that, and count everybody, and they counted security outside, and they counted some empty suites and things like that. They counted all the personnel working the event, and anyway, they're emailing afterwards talking about, you know, what a success it was, and everybody was happy, and they should be happy. It was a great successful event, but I'm talking about the attendance in specific here. They seem to be really accepting this, including the city of San Antonio employees who work for the Alamo Dome. They seem to be really accepting the TV announced attendance that was, you know, announced on the broadcast as, and it made me think like, oh, that's normal, you know, like that they would just accept this number that included personnel and, in this case, apparently included empty suites and security outside and things like that. I've
never heard of that before. Yeah, never heard of that before. Collision ratings, we talked about that. And obviously where kind of those go up when they start going against tougher competition on Saturdays. Grand Slam attendance, I'm curious where that ends up. I assume it'll be down from last year, which was down from the year before, and especially coming off two big shows. Is it going to feel as big? What are they going to do to, you know, what type of main event are they going to do? Because that's, again, a second stadium show in 2 months, essentially, right around a month from All In. Again, do you have that creative exhaustion and how does that work? I'm interested in, and again, the arena strategy, I'm interested in that to see kind of what they're announcing already some dates for October. Smaller towns I'm noticing, Stockton, California is one. There's a one in the suburb of Houston, a town I've never heard of that they just announced for last week. Of course, they're doing a Tuesday Dynamite in October to do the MLB playoffs and being preempted. And thoughts about that before I get it in, to wrap up with this 3-hour Dynamite question I have?
Not really. I mean, their attendances right now, they could certainly, you know, have capacity if they moved to more like college basketball venues versus NBA venues. But yeah, Arthur Ashe tickets are on sale already. In fact, I don't know how long this has been going on, but
a few weeks, I think.
At 5,000 according to WrestleTix.
Gotcha. So yeah, still some time to go. And again, no match. I mean, it feels like eons away from now, but yeah, I'm very interested to see how that turns out.
Just feel like a question, like, can they break 10,000? I guess.
Yeah. I think it's a good question. Yeah. And what they do for a big main event. They traditionally have done that in the past 2 years. So we'll see what happens there. We'll wrap up with a 3-hour Dynamite question mark. Because you talked in WrestleNomics 3 weeks ago, maybe longer. This came up after one of the Tony Khan calls. I believe it was for Death Before Dishonor. One of the media calls he did. Or no, it was Blood and Guts. Sorry, I think it was Blood and Guts. It might have been you that asked him this, and I can't remember, yes. But essentially about the idea of a 3-hour Dynamite. I cannot remember the actual phrasing of the question.
Because the ratings had just come out, because they had just done the 3-hour block.
Or a Collision Battle of the Belts, yeah.
And the ratings had literally just come out like an hour prior. And the ratings were pretty good, despite, you know, they went through to 11 p.m., right? It was Collision followed by Battle of the Belts. And Battle of the Belts rating, it was the best Battle of the Belts rating in quite some time. And that special has really struggled, but it did well following Collision.
Right.
And just to put myself in the mindset of a cold, indifferent TV scheduler who doesn't care about wrestling fans who complain about there being too much wrestling to watch. And if I'm just, you know, looking at that rating, looking at the ratings that the AEW does generally, it has to do with Rampage. Like my idea would be to remove Rampage and put that hour on top of Dynamite, because the third hour of Dynamite is going to do a better rating than Rampage delivers. There's almost no question about it. So if I'm trying to extract the best value out of this 5-hour deal that I have, why would I not do it?
So what I found fascinating about this was when Tony Khan answered, he did a long pause. And then he said something like that. That's an interesting thought, or that's an interesting question, or something.
I get the impression that he had not really considered it before. And I don't think it's something that they've discussed, but it's an idea.
Au contraire. I think, and I was surprised you brought this up in WrestleNomics, and Jesse and Chris didn't really seem to think much about or care to engage much. And I'm like, I cannot wait to talk about this. I jotted it down in my notes immediately.
Okay.
I think this is a guarantee. This is going to happen when the next deal is signed. I think Rampage is going to move to 10, and I think they're going to do 3 hours of Dynamite, 2 hours of Collision, and that's going to be their block. It, to your point, it makes too much sense not to. You have this straggling thing out here, Rampage, at 10 o'clock. You're already fighting against people being out Fridays, the coming after SmackDown. You have people that are... I've already got to get their wrestling fix, so they're not necessarily jumping over in droves to go over. It gets preempted all the time. And the biggest point is the numbers would be better if it aired after Dynamite as part of a 3-hour block. If you're going to have 3 hours of programming, you know, why not do it in a straight shot like that? The pass and Rampage kind of being an additional go home show for pay-per-views that month it's kind of diminished, because Double or Nothing, they did not do a live Rampage like they have in the past. They did a taped one, and they're just, your go home is really kind of focused on Dynamite. It makes too much sense in the world not to do that. And again, if you're TBS, TNT, WBD, you're thinking, why don't we just move this? We'll just put on a movie there. It's not going to matter. And we'll just, we'll just include this.
The movie is going to deliver similarly, I think. You know, the last 2 weeks of Rampage have been better than usual. They did a 0.15 this past Friday, 0.14 Friday before that, which is better than the 10s and 11s that it's been doing. And sometimes as low as 9 for a demo rating. But, you know, it is a Friday. That's tough. And certainly Wednesday at 10, another hour, Dynamite is going to do better than a 10. It's going to probably do a lot better than a 15. It's not going to do the high 20s that maybe the first 2 hours do, but it's still going to do better. It's still going to probably do the high teens, at least probably the low 20s. So the argument against it is the argument against the third hour of Raw is that this is going to be so taxing on our audience that there's going to be long-term effects that are not worth the value of the money that we get out of it.
Right. That's possible. I if you think of just a numbers play, if you're looking at it, it's like, why don't we just move this? It's less friction because you don't have to ask fans to commit to another night, and it gives it a little bit more purpose.
I might argue that Tony's booking style is more conducive. He's such a maximalist. He would do well with a 3-hour show versus a 2-hour show. I know Dave makes the point that 90 minutes is the perfect amount. And there's a stigma. There's a brand stigma to the 3-hour Raw that has existed now for 11 years or whatever.
Right.
Economically, just looking at it coldly, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that's my big prediction for the future. I think that's going to happen. I think it's a fait accompli. That would be my, my prediction. Again, a lot of things can happen, but, as we sit here right now, I think it makes a lot of sense. Anything else on the forecast, that's kind of caught your eye, stuff that's not down here or anything?
No, I've gone on my leadership rant. that's an interesting thought. You know, you bring up about, you know, what are they going to do for Grand Slam? They're not only going to have All In and then the next week All Out. It's what, the 20th or something like that? So that is like 2 weeks removed, I think. But they're going to have to do Grand Slam. I don't expect huge things here for Grand Slam. looking into Q4, there's going to be that Chicago War Week where Survivor Series and SmackDown are going to be in Chicago the same week that AEW is going to run their usual Thanksgiving Dynamite show. But yeah, look forward to that.
Yeah, good stuff ahead. So if we let you go, obviously give you a chance to plug WrestleNomics. You can find it at WrestleNomics.com, available on Patreon, of course, $5 a month. And I know you've made some changes there. Give more of the podcast exclusive to WrestleNomics
right.
subscribers and all that. But what else could you say about WrestleNomics?
Quarter hour reports are there. The key performance indicators is a little PDF that I made for this podcast in particular. That's there for subscribers. There's monthly reports that I put out. I've put out the most recent monthly reports on the most matches, the most promotions for each wrestler based on cage match data, the top WWE and AEW YouTube videos for all of July. That's listed and ranked. There's Google Trends for companies, which is partly what we were talking about earlier, and TV ratings reports nearly every day, sometimes twice a day on days like this.
Yep. And of course, you do your show with John Pollock, which is available on WrestleNomics and as well as also on Post Wrestling as well. You do the Sunday show at 11 with Jesse Collins and Chris Gulo. And also, what else? What else am I forgetting for shows?
The Sunday shows for subscribers. You're doing better. People who I bring me on their shows always plug the content better than I do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'd say it's a great value, especially if you're into the numbers. And especially if you're, just things that you do when I get, the daily email alerts from Patreon. It's just interesting stuff of like, how's Women of Wrestling doing? Impact Wrestling, you'll throw out numbers and things like that. These things that kind of exist in the periphery, but they do exist. And there's people, companies paying for them and kind of just intrigue in some of those numbers. I'll add that.
Yes. The original place, I think the only place you'll originally find WOW ratings and New Japan and Impact, not every week, but I mean, all the episodes are reported. There might be a delayed cadence on it.
Very good. So you can get there, WrestleNomics. But Brandon Thurston, thanks so much for stopping by, and we'll see you in just over 3 months.
See you then, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Brandon Thurston for stopping by. As always, busy guy over there at WrestleNomics. I'm a subscriber there and really enjoy the content quite a bit. The podcast that he does every week, some of the other written content and all that good stuff. So yeah, check him out. $5 a month and great deal. Nice companion to the stuff that we do here, and a nice addition to your wrestling podcast listening if you're into this kind of stuff. And a big thanks to the mystery lady who did the intro at the very beginning. That mystery lady I'll reveal to you is my wife, and I asked her to do this, even though she has 0.0 interest in pro wrestling, can't stand it, won't watch it, will walk out of the room, but however was kind enough to lend her voice to the beginning of the call, and you may hear from her again. We'll just say that. May hear from her again. So I'm going to get out of here. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. Greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. I'm not going to promise anything for the next couple of weeks because when I did that last time, schedules had to change and all that good stuff. But I'm constantly working on some guests, some interesting guests, and some new stuff. So hopefully some good stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks, including the one I said would be very interesting for our website subscribers, and I will leave it at that. This person I have been talking to just trying to coordinate schedules, but my hope is that's going to happen sooner than later, depending on the schedules, and it'll be a lot more apparent when I talk to this person why that is. So I'll just leave it at that. So again, thanks all for listening, and until next time, thanks for listening to Josh Nace's Punch Out. Insert catchphrase here.
That concludes our call today. You may now hang up.
Perfect. Good job. Can I ask you one more question?
What?
Do you prefer Kenny Omega or Roman Reigns?
Who? Roman Reigns? Roman
Exactly.
Roman Reigns? Yeah, Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns.
All right.